What did he say?
Alto and Glenn.
This is more or less. This is before the 20, this is around in 1920 to 24.
Okay, early 20s.
Yeah, really. That's before. See, what, there's a gap, like I told you, in the history of Pittsburgh. You see, there were three different levels. The original African American Musical Society of 1908, they were the road pavers.
Right.
They were legitimate musicians. Right. They didn't play the jazz. The people that played the, see, I had a sister 16 years older than me, could sing the blues. And they taught me the history when I got back. There were, when Pine Top and that bunch was around, that is before Earl Hines.
And Earl Hines is in mid-20s.
Around anywhere between 26 and, he left here in 27.
Right, right.
At
like
the same time Roy Elders left here. He's on about 15 or 16. Now there's another group, since we was talking
about it's coming to you.
On them bands. That, another band I want to tell you about that was see at that level. Now, my sister knew all of the joints. She used to go in and Pine Top, used to go around and play that boogie. See, they were pre-20s, before 20s. This happened in the area between 1914 and 1920.
Just before the Civil War.
Yeah.
Or the war. It was over in 1918, wasn't it, or was that when it started?
18 it was over.
It was over, okay, so yeah, okay.
See, I knew about the war because I in 1920 is when I went, but I was born with great recall and memory. I can remember during the war, the brown bottles that they sold milk in. Brown milk bottles.
And with the cream on the top?
Yeah, but the bottle was brown.
Oh, okay.
Brown bottle. And when I left here, people were staking out goats all through the hill up there. Shenley Farm, that was the farm.
Right.
Shenley Field, that was Malone's field.
Yeah.
Shenley Farms, Carrot, where he lived. That was my paper route back in 29 and 30.
Yeah.
And they didn't get it until I guess in the 60s. Because there was a guy named Beverly Roberts, editor for the Pittsburgh Courier. And he filed a discrimination suit.
Living up there.
Yeah, but now, on both sides of that Center Avenue, those people who the road favors old timers have died out, and their heirs, that's old their heirs, sell them places, and they're living in California or Sweden, wherever. And then we move in and destroy it.
What instrument, is that like a bass sax?
Wait.
Because it's too big for a baritone.
That's probably a bass sax. See the bell on it?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's too big for a baritone.
That's a bass sax.
Okay.
Well, the saxophone family. You never seen a bass sax?
Because the mouthpiece is down here.
Hey man, this is an old picture.
It is.
Moonlight. You
almost got the name of the band.
Yes, I want to tell you, Eli Sarenberg.
Oh, okay.
That was the boss band.
Oh, okay.
Prior
to this one,
they were probably around with this band. See. Eli Serenader, because I remember making some gigs with Davenport, who was a clarinet player in these. See, Roy and Joe was in the Eli Serenader.
Wow, okay. Were they from Northside?
Yeah.
Okay.
There was another guy that was with Eli, Greeley Walsh. He was a tenor player, and they all went to New York. Well, Greeley ended up with Louis Russell's band.
Okay.
And he had a cousin named Alvin Burroughs, was waiting for Walter Bishop to die so he could take the seat in Earl Hines.
Yeah.
See, when those guys got into New York and got situated, they kind of looked out for the boys.
Right.
But yeah. I'll do some research on this. Because I need to make this, you see, this band was around up possibly when the Eli Serenade was going. But they were the top band.
Oh, that was the top band.
And they left here and went to New York.
And that was Joe
Eldridge.
Eldridge, right.
See, I had an occasion, which makes me angry with some of the guys I know, wanting to put themselves in. Back in 1932, I was playing with Lee's Royal Ramblers. And Roy and Joe come back here to form a big band because the depression that hit and jazz was up.
Yeah.
And we used to hire Joe as the ringer to sit in. And I got to know Joe. And the last time I saw him was in 1945. Him and Hotlip Page, they had a little group and they was touring because most of the guys was in the Army.
Yeah.
And we were both there during the hurricane.
Oh, okay.
And that's when I saw Joe, you know, Joe stuttered.
Because I didn't know him. Yeah. You know, I didn't know him.
And we come back off of the road, the road, and that's when I made up my mind. I said, well, I know I ain't going to get no work in Pittsburgh. And I had a nice deal. I had a guarantee with Ferguson. If I didn't work, I was guaranteed three nights a week. And I was making more money than Big Maybell and a lot of the dudes in the band just on a handshake than for Ferguson. But Eli Serenade had
a good band. Yeah.
And most of them, they went to New York and stayed around. They were legitimate enough. Then they didn't, Dan Jan used to be in the marching bands and play for the New York Giants.
Right, okay.
Because I was hearing Roy was president and discussing with man, I know.
Yeah, yeah. were these like show bands?
Dance bands.
Dance bands.
Dance bands.
Okay.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, because in fact, he's the vocalist.
Okay. Oh, she might have been the pianist.
Maybe so.
Yeah, this is the bass. Now, you know, that bass saxophone goes way back in the early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
Because they used to have saxophone duet, saxophone family.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got a little miniature saxophone.
Yeah, the C melody.
Yeah,
C melody, because it's a little small pipe.
E-flat clarinet.
I probably have because
it's
I've
about,
seen
it's about that long.
Yeah, because I know some of the guys have different clarinets, A clarinet and so forth, you know, like for classical work.
This guy looks like there was a guy from the North Side named Paul Williams.
Hmm.
He would be in that kit. But man, this is a way back picture. You see the guy with the band?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And this young looking guy?
Mm-hmm. It looks like a violin, isn't it?
Violin.
Yeah.
Well, they had violins in the band. Now, they had two trumpets and a trombone. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This is, I don't lie about what I know.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of them bands that was between 20 and 24.
Mm-hmm.
Then McDew come back with another band around 28 or 29.
Mm-hmm. Oh, McDew's band was, later on, 28, 29.
Yeah, and 30.
So right.
Even to 31, because a friend of mine played with the band. Earl Littlejohn played with McDougal.
Yeah.
But see, in that band, there was Mac on trumpet. I knew some of the Reed section was Colonel Gibson. and they had a guy, Dr. Sessions, from the Keys Board.
Mm-hmm. Was that, okay, and his son later, is that the heavyset doctor now that's around? There's a Dr. Sessions, a heavyset guy.
No, he did, Sessions.
No, but I mean, could it be his son or grandson?
Or his brother. How old does this guy look to be?
Well, this guy's got to be in his 60s. 50s, 60s.
He's the son of, because a friend of mine, we played music together. He went to New York. And we left Stoney.
Mm-hmm.
And he was up in New York. He played the Black Cat. And he decided that he was going to go to school. And in 38, he wrote me a letter saying, man, and he went to Fisk.
Yeah.
After the first year of Fisk, he come back, then he told me about the session. Earl Littlejohn used to tell me about the session.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Legitimate.
Right, right.
See, they were, that era, they were legitimate music.
Right,
they didn't play this. The jazz was played down the hill.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I know every day, like Little Louie.
Right, okay.
And okay. Hardy Kelly, mm-hmm. Archie Johnson, and any number of them used to float in and out of town.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because, see, you could always get a gig with some joint. Guys from Erie and places like that would hit, come this way. But you never got nobody from Philadelphia coming this way. We got people from within Pennsylvania and maybe down around the borderline. See, West Virginia had a tremendous background.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Where Don Redman lived, and he had some relatives named that had a band, eight-piece band, Redman's Bellhop.
Mm-hmm.
And man, we were so high.
Hey,
boy, how you doing?
How you doing?
Okay.
How y'all doing?
Good.
Good to see you.
Ask him if he knows what he's here for. Would he know
he would know. He would know better than me. You ain't going to see nobody that I know of. I'm going to have to do some research.
Right.
Man, this goes way.
Yeah.
So when they was calling them syncopators, that was anywhere from 20 up until 28.
Yeah, because what's his name's Earl Hines' band had something like that.
Syncopated. And Billy Page with his Broadway syncopated.
Okay.
But he come out of West Virginia. See, any area that had equal but separate education in the back, because it was equal, you got good foundation and instruction.
Right. The music thing was good.
Yeah.
And you learned.
So anybody that come out of that environment was good. What affected Pittsburgh was them people, they moved from one plantation to another with the plantation mentality. Change the scene, but the same mentality. And this is why we'll never get together here.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. It's still manifesting.
Hey, man, this is a...
Yeah.
I have to rack my brain and look at this. See, now, prior to them, that area, like the Serenaders that I was telling you about with Roy and Joe, this is when Billy Butler, that crowd was it. And the only reason I have knowledge of oral history, guys like Fred Gould, he was a drunk.
Okay,
and Mr. Wallace, Earl Wallace, mm-hmm. who's one of them charter members,
mm-hmm.
Earl, and he had a brother who played mellotron. He was instrumental in getting me connected with Harry Chapman, who had played in Pittsburgh Symphony. Which was way back.
Yeah.
And they would tell me about Billy Butler. And the two most outstanding drummers before the 20s was Joe DeSanta and the Italian Billy Butler.
Yeah.
Now, local 4-7-1-60, you see them people in there, they don't have no knowledge of this. See, I go back when I was acting, it was Claire, before Al Davis, Claire Meter.
Right.
And wait a minute, Mal Johnson was the Secretary of Treasury. And when Al, the Black Union, got included, when the Depression hit and the federal government set up different areas of work, you know Charlie's going. And they pulled them in. But here's what they did. They left it in the hands of people like Jim Bailey, because they knew he was a, and he could play about as much trumpet as I could. And they set the thing up.
Right.
And I knew every living that passed through the channels of that band. And then I got married in 36. I gigged around, and things were so lucky enough to go so high and get on WPA. In the meantime, as work was picking up, different ones were leaving the WPA. Brasfield left, Frank Humphreys coming. Frank left, Dave Page coming. They all come to the channel. Then the next turn, Fitch coming. And Fitch, I was in with Fitch, Arthur Orr Slops, and the boy, what is his name? Fitch was supposed to be teaching him trumpet. And he got drafted and went to the Army. And I interceded in getting Andy in that band.
Andy Woods.
Yeah, because we were.
Pretty close, right.
But I, now don't misunderstand me, I was the brain behind that operation, because I was studying, Billy Lewis was studying, and I, the younger one, wouldn't let that old man fit in his wisdom. And I used to tell Andy, let's get this number, get that number. That was giving me the experience to apply the knowledge I acquired working in spirit. We played rumblers, we played polkas, we played Benny Goodman, we played Glenn Miller.
You covered all of it.
And read it. Played all of this stuff. Well, that I had gained some experience applying my knowledge. So when these bands would come through here that really required you, I could make it. It's just like now I listen to that big man. I ain't been sitting, but because of my back. If he put the chart up there, I ain't going to say, my eyes are clouded. Because I maybe traveled farther than he did and under better tutelage.
Right.
But I'm just a low profile individual. Hey, man,
but see,
you give me a cup. I'll get the information.
I'll tell you what. Take this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then if you can, you know, search
I know
around.
How to do research, and I will do it and get it together.
Yeah, because the names are, you know, if we just come up with some names, because I mean, you were the only one I thought of that could, you know, could identify some of these people, you know, but you're saying this is an earlier...
These young people seem to be in the 22, 3, and 4.
Yeah. Because when Frank said he had a picture, I thought he had a picture, but this was a newspaper, you know, a thing out of a newspaper.
Oh, he got this out of
See, and then I took it out to the, you know, copy place, and it made a fairly decent copy, you know. But,
I can tell by the setup, the drums that they had.
Right.
That's looking right.
Look at that French horn.
You
know, there's a French horn
laying
on the floor there?
Yeah. Well, Ike Matthews was the one French horn player that I knew, African American. And he made the WPA six.
They were more perfected. I mean,
Earl Wallace and Mail and Hall, they excluded them from the
because they couldn't cut the
their technique. Yeah.
But Wallace could do it.
Could do it.
Ike Matthews.
Okay. Yeah.
So they had to come over into the jazz.
Yeah.
And it was just lucky enough when Bradfield was on his way out. Dave Page played in there.
Yeah.
A boy named Saunders.
What
is Saunders? He came out of the Army and went to plumbing school. told me he was going to go to San Diego because he had a family.
Yeah.
But he was just, but he didn't have the right teacher because kids could be But his instrument was piano. But hey, you got this. This was in the paper. Because anybody that would have had that picture, this is between 20 and 24.
Because there's a Ray Street address, you know, where he was living, you know. You know, Kathy, we would like, Kathy would like to interview you so we could do an article on you in our newsletter. If you don't have any objections, I'd like to hook up and let her talk to you, you know, let her interview you enough. You know, we're not going to, you know, we want to be sure to separate, your autobiography information.
Yeah.
You know, we want to kind of, but general, we just want a general thing on you. Because of the history input that you're doing for us.
Well, I tell you what. It's great. I called my brother on Sunday. I was talking with his wife. Yesterday evening, my nephew called me. That's my brother's son. And he said, I'm also doing the family tree.
Right.
Of the Dorsey, the Young, and the Winslow.
Okay.
See, because fortunately, by me going to D.C. at an early age, we had the big Bible, and because of my memory, I know, I can trace our family on my father's side to slavery. On my mother's side, from what she told me, my grandfather, my mother's father, was from around Michigan. Their mother died at an early age. He had accepted what? Then he came on into D.C. And I got to do that for him because, see, I'm getting old, and my brother, who's younger than me, 3 or 4 years younger than me, he didn't have the insight on it like because he didn't come to Washington to live with us until he was 6 years old.
Oh, okay.
And he stayed 1 year and then he got
left.
But that 1 year was enough to start him to think. And then he came on and he went in the army and he never did come back here.
Yeah.
He met a girl, married her, went to Howard University and graduated.
No, you call, not him.
He's a, he's a cartographer.
Who's that?
A map maker.
Oh,
he worked for Strategic Air Command.
Oh, right, okay.
He had an office and a staff down there in D.C. And I don't know, all his was slide rules. They would go out to make observations, bring the film into him, and he'd give it to his aide. And after he got it, was classified interest, he said, Curtis, you could see him just like I'm looking at you. They had that, and so they would know where the munition dumps.
Right.
And then he would set up.
Yeah.
He stayed with them. Oh, he retired in 73. I retired in 79, and I'm older than him. But his wife encouraged him to go to Howard, and he graduated and got some extra. And she went to an exclusive school in Detroit.
Oh, yeah. How you doing? This is
She's third generation college graduate in her family.
Right, okay.
And she was an English major. And see, when I would get my vacation, when I was active in the union, and I would be in the Philadelphia area, I was tutored by her.
And look them up.
You don't have to go over to the University of Pittsburgh and get tutoring, because it all depends on the individual.
Right.
Can you observe? What is presented to you, and then be able to apply it. You got to interpret. So you know what you're doing. And man, I look at these with these PhDs, you know. And see, that doesn't work out here.
No.
No.
Just letters, that's all it is.
Hey.
Yeah.
You know, when you start to doing this back there, it takes us, who is the source of information? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I don't mean no hearsay.
Mm-hmm.
The average is the person that runs the front door.
Right.
And to have something to say, he'll tell him something that he don't know. And when I go home and lay down, and my thoughts come to me,
and I've got
to start to write me down. Because, see, I was knew this by the oral history, things being passed on to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, see,
if I'm not mistaken, this is Brad, I mean, the dentist.
Dentist?
Brassfield.
Oh,
Dr. Franklin Brassfield.
Huh.
Yeah, he played with the dudes back there, and I'm looking at his mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Brassfield, and back there then, Jimmy Hawley from McKeesport was the drummer. What I was telling you. My nephew called me and said, look here, however you want to come so that you can complete what you were talking to me about. If it be by plane,
train, anyway.
Money ain't no object.
Just get here.
Just get here. So they know I'm getting over.
Yeah.
So what I'm going to do, I'm going up for a weekend and record.
Mm-hmm.
And I got my notes
and stuff.
The only thing that's lacking is pictures.
Mm-hmm.
But I can tell a story. That you'll get a picture
from.
So what I'm going to do, I'm going and then see, I'm an apiarist. You know what that is?
What?
Apiarist. Beekeeper.
Are you?
I learned that 30-some years ago.
Sure.
I was custodian of a building, and the principal was a beekeeper. And the bees swarm right around this, between the end of May and the 14th of June, because a bee in July ain't worth a fly. Anyhow, I am having all this land up there.
Well, do you have, what are y'all, facilities and hives and all that? You got them now?
They're up there now.
Up above Philly.
The reason I'm going, see, my brother, he drives to Pottstown. He got to get his New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and I showed him how to set it. But they practically take care of themselves.
Right.
The only time around this time of year is when they swarm, if you got two queens.
Okay,
If you let it develop to two queens, when she matures, she'll take half of your swarm.
Mm-hmm.
Then your production is down, and then they're weak.
Right.
And then the wax moth are the top. But see, when you got a full colony, they got them worker bees there out there, and then they got them drones that they use for stud per. But ain't nothing coming in there. That wax moth is killing. And at the end of the season, after they fertilize all the eggs, they kill the drone. And you grow.
Because they threw. They threw it.
They're right on the apron. But man, bee nor something else.
Yeah. How long have you been doing that?
Since 1966.
Oh, okay. About 30 years now.
And I also, one of my hobbies is horticulture.
Oh, yeah.
I can do bonsai.
Oh, yeah?
I can make dish gardens.
Yeah.
In fact, I had a little store over on the south side in 1976.
Yeah.
And I got involved in the union. I just have a
you got to be doing something, right?
So when I go up, they have built a greenhouse, you know, because I talk all this talk to him, of course, his wife, they know about farming and all. And so I was saying, you know, I had a different picture. I said, your greenhouse, how big is it? I said, can you stand up in it? You know, some people have a little cubicle.
Yeah.
I said, that. He said, no, it's 12 by 30.
Yeah.
And he said, we got a couple of chairs in there. I said, what's the humidity? He said, we even got a ventilating fan.
Right.
He said, we got oil heat. See, he worked for one of the largest wholesale nursery and greenhouses in Pennsylvania, and he went there when he was about 13 or 14 years and learned the business, learned the craft, and they had him as manager of the hay production. But what happened, them people are selling them farms up there, and they're making the housing development, which becomes slums, because they wind up with a thing, then they people start to rent them. Then you get all
kinds of folks
right across the road from where that her family owned 105 acres. 150 acres. They sold all but 50 acres on this.